Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, U-N-I-F-Y-D, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
What's up, y'all? It's Drewski, and I've teamed up with Mountain Dew to produce a hilarious new basketball podcast called The Dew Zone with Drewski. Learn the backstories of your favorite ballers and celebrities like Jamal Murray.
Did you have, like, a favorite team? Was it the Raptors at the time or no? Was the Raptors even started around that time?
Come on, bro.
I ain't that old, fam. You're talking like I'm 50.
Taylor Rooks, Asia Wilson, and many more. You won't want to miss this. Listen to The Dew Zone with Drewski on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts.
Welcome to In the Know, the Bourbon Street Shots podcast. Your hosts are Michael McNamara and me, Ryan Schwan. It's all Pelicans, all the time.
And welcome to the pre-draft In the Know show. There's been actually a ton of stuff that's come out and things we could talk about since our last podcast, Michael, so let's just get right to it. Which is the most important piece of news, that Fallout 4 is coming out in November or that they've announced Mass Effect Andromeda?
Fallout 4? I have no idea. I did play some of the early Mass Effect. I'm not a guy who... I get a lot of flack from this from the kids that I teach and coach. I'm not somebody who really cares about storylines in video games. I skip right past all that stuff. So,
yeah, but if you play Mass Effect, you get to bang blue chicks.
Well, yeah, but you're acting like that's different from my regular life. All right, let's get back on Pelicans here.
All right, so let's talk some Pelicans. So, yes, since our last podcast, I mean, we knew Alvin Gentry. But there's been quite a bit more. So, I'm going to let you start off on this because you are really, really, is it fair to say really, really excited about the new Pelicans coaching staff and what it's shaping up to be?
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I don't think that we should have fully judged this hire. Obviously, we had to have a podcast right after Gentry was brought in, but it was at least a two-step process, if not multiple steps of we knew Gentry would be our offensive coordinator of sorts and that he would bring in a defensive guy that would kind of run that side of the ball and work with players on that side of the ball. And there was a lot of possibilities out there. I actually didn't think Darren Erman was a possibility. He was a guy that, you know, had been coveted in the past. The Clippers tried to get him. A couple other teams tried to get him. I thought he was kind of staying put in Boston. So when they got him, I just think that was an incredibly impressive hire. You basically now have the guy who laid the foundations for Golden State's defense, which obviously just won a title. The guy who took their offense or helped take their offense to the next level in Gentry. So, you know, you're kind of building a Warriors East, so to say. Obviously, the rosters are far different, but you do have the superstar in place as well. I thought that was a great hire. I thought Robert Pack was another one. That was a guy I remember when Robert Pack left. I think fans were more upset about that than, you know, even Darren Collison getting traded, or maybe not Marcus Thornton, because people are irrational about him at times. But sure. He was a guy that did a great job here a couple of years ago, went on to the Clippers, has been given a lot of the credit for Eric Bledsoe. Some of the same credit was given to him for Reggie Jackson kind of taking off. So if you basically assume that we have the big man of the next decade in place, it's really going to come down to our guards kind of getting to that next level. And I think a combination of Gentry's system, Pack working with them, and Ehrman, who, you know, Rondo sings his praises. He's, you know, was given a lot of credit for Klay Thompson's defensive development. I think a combination of those three guys could really help take our guards to the next level. And if that happens, combined where AD is going, you know, I'm very impressed with who they've gotten and the coaching staff so far. And there's still one or two hires left to go.
Yeah, I mean, and more about Ehrman, his last job was in Boston, and I think that was actually more impressive what he did there. Because, I mean, he basically took a team with its top six players being Isaiah Thomas, Avery Bradley, who's defensive, Jared Sullinger, Brandon Bass, Kelly Olynyk, and Evan Turner, and turned that into the 12th best defense in the league. Like, the only guy on there who I'd even want, like, in the same sentence as defense is Avery Bradley. And nobody else there can defend worth a damn, apparently, except for in the system that Darren put in place up in Boston. So that should hopefully pay some dividends. I've beat this drum before. Like, this defense has to improve, and, you know, maybe Darren can make some magic happen.
You're such a Kelly Olynyk hater.
I'm so, like, come on. Like, Kelly Olynyk, he didn't even manage a block a game. Although, actually, I'm not a hater. I wouldn't mind Kelly Olynyk being on my team. We could just unleash him on other people's big men to dislocate their shoulders.
That's what he does best.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I thought that was a tremendous hire. It's also a guy who's, you know, a little younger, obviously. And one of my concerns about Gentry was nothing to do with the short term. But, you know, I always said long term it would be ideal to have somebody kind of grow with AD. I mean, it's a possible situation. I wouldn't say it's likely, but it's possible that Ehrman could be a successor if he doesn't get another head coaching job before then. He could be a successor to Gentry. There were also some rumors that the Pelicans were after Melvin Hahn from Denver, which would have been a tremendous hire, but it looks like they're missing out on a couple of guys, him, Baresio, because they can't offer the lead assistant job anymore, which is understandable. Hunt's got a lead assistant job in Dallas, but our good friend Amin El-Hassan, who we had on the podcast last time, said that the Pelicans, according to what he's hearing, is close to hiring another really good assistant coach. He just didn't want to announce it yet, and I tried to weasel my way in through the back door and email him, but he wouldn't even tell me. He said that he wants it to be announced officially, but you know, he did tell me that we would have a very good staff. So like I said, one or two more guys, and there's still guys here. I mean, Gentry is in town in New Orleans. He obviously has the press conference tomorrow, and I was told that one of his orders of business is that he's going to be speaking to the guys who are still on staff. And I think maybe just from a practical issue, you could see him keeping one or two around. I mean, most of those contracts work where the Pelicans are going to have to pay those guys anyway, unless they get another gig. So, you know, maybe keep one or two guys around. Kevin Hansen would make some sense. Worked with AD in the past. But the other thing I'm really excited to get to see is, you know, Gentry and the teams that he's been with have been in the forefront of technology, whether it's, you know, different scouting technology or, you know, technology with regards to injuries and, you know, Golden State credited a lot of their success this season to being able to keep minutes down, which they were able to do because they had so many 20-point leads. But still, it was a philosophy of theirs to keep minutes down. I mean, other than just the staff, what else are you excited about Gentry possibly bringing to New Orleans?
Oh, I mean, honestly, it's actually more to do. I'll be honest. I'm more excited about Darren Erman than I am about Gentry, which is kind of weird. Did you read the Zach Lowe piece about the Warriors and how they came to be?
Oh, yeah.
And there, it was very obvious that Darren was one of the people he interviewed, but like just the description of what he was doing in there. And then later I was reading an article where he was again talking about how the Golden State Warriors staff, when he was there, evaluated people. And it actually transferred into this year as well. They actually gave them like game readiness ratings on like a 100-point scale. And if you were at below a certain points, you weren't going to be playing necessarily, and they would have special treatment plans just to improve you. And those, I mean, there's some crazy stuff going on out there. And I don't know, I cannot say anything horrible about the New Orleans Pelicans training staff, because I don't know how they do their job except for their results suck. So if I could see some better results as a result of this staff coming in, if we could just get a little bit more health out of our team, I'm going to be extremely happy. And I don't know. It seemed to be something that Erman was particularly focused on when he was talking.
Yeah, I'm really curious to see who else they get, but it looks like they're getting guys from franchises who are a little ahead of the curve, or at least a little ahead of where we've been, so I'm excited about that. I mean, Gentry's going to have his press conference tomorrow. I think it's at 3:30. You know, you'll be able to watch it on Pelicans.com, and I think there's even the local Fox affiliate might be playing it. So it's a big deal. They put a billboard up this weekend welcoming Alvin Gentry. I mean, it seems like the Pelicans are kind of going all in with this being a new era, an era of excitement, fast-paced basketball, et cetera. He's there tomorrow. You're there at the press conference. What would be the one question you'd like to ask him, or what would you like to hear, assuming that you could get a dead honest answer?
A dead honest answer, I would probably go with, do you have any use for Tyreek Evans at all?
Wow. At all?
I maybe wouldn't word it quite that way, but I would try to get some sort of response from him about, do you see Tyreek Evans as an appropriate fit for this team? That is my number one question going into next year. Right now, the more I think about it, I can't actually decide where I am with Tyreek Evans and how he fits into any sort of offense I can imagine Alvin Gentry running. I don't know. He can't shoot, and that makes such a difference to everything I've ever seen. Like, can you think of his past point guards, every single one of them, whether it was Chris Paul or Steph Curry or Steve Nash, who was, you know, Steph Curry before Steph Curry came along. All of these guys were master shooters, and Paul at worst was decent. So how does that work? I can't figure it out.
Yeah, I've been trying. I mean, I think the Bird Rights did a really good piece this week on Evans and the best case scenario. I mean, there was a lot of stuff in there about how Evans is willing to work hard, and you know how his shooting did improve somewhat this season. I think this is the time of year where you could sell yourself on the best case scenario of anybody. You could also talk about the worst case, and you just don't know how it's going to play out. But I agree with you that Evans is the one that is most likely to, you know, you look at the top guys, I think even more than Ashiq, the one most likely to struggle, only because Ashiq, you could play for 22 to 24 minutes like they did with Bogut, get what you need out of him and get out and not have him in at the end of games. And I still think that would be a relatively successful season for him, but something like that wouldn't be successful for Tyreek. I think the best I could possibly see, I mean, I look at Gentry and the past, and you want to say Barbosa, but Barbosa was jacking up threes off that second unit, and he was hitting them at a high rate, so it's not Barbosa. I think the closest, and he was much older at the time, but Grant Hill, you know, he was a lower usage player, but in Gentry's seasons, you're looking at about 30 minutes a game, 12 points, 5 boards, 3 assists, and he's shooting. I mean, he shot his highest percentages from the field in those years with Gentry, and especially that one year where Phoenix was great. I mean, he shot 52% from the field, which was a career high, only 31 from three. So he struggled, and that's about where you would expect Tyreke to be. But, I mean, maybe a more explosive Grant Hill, he could use him in that way where he's cutting, slashing, getting to the basket, you know, maybe a couple of mid-range jumper. I think you could maybe sell me on that, but again, it's a stretch, and not every single guy on this team is going to hit their best case scenario projection. And I agree, it's tough with me to see how Tyreke fits in here.
Yeah. So now you got to tell me what if you had him in front of you and you had administered the truth serum, and he had to tell you the truth. What are you asking him? One question.
I want to ask him if he thinks that Eric Gordon could get off the same shots that Steph and Clay did. Because I think a lot of people see Eric Gordon's three-point percentage last year, and then they see the open shots that, you know, Golden State got with ball movement, and they go, wow, you know, Eric Gordon could have a good year. And I'm part of that. But again, going back and watching a lot of Golden State, Clay had size. He could get his shot up over people. Steph had a tremendous, you know, handle, of course, and one of the quickest releases ever. I guess I just wonder if he thinks that Eric Gordon could get up some of those same shots that we saw the Splash Brothers, you know, make. And because if he can't, I mean, if you could keep similar percentages, why isn't Eric Gordon attempting 6 to 8 threes per game? And I think that would be ideal for a Gentry system, but he's so small and his release has gotten a little quicker, but it's not nearly what those guys have. And I guess I just wonder if he thinks that, you know, that Gordon, is he planning on increasing his volume? And if so, will Gordon be able to get up, you know, as many threes as that percentage says he should attempt?
All I know is that if it's anything like NBA 2K15, he's not getting a single shot off.
Yeah, but the 2K Ronnie or whatever his name is did say that they are working on his relief. They're bringing Eric Gordon into the studios to motion capture his actual release and make it a little bit quicker. So yeah, that's my thing. I mean, Gordon, to me, I really don't have a problem with him as a player anymore. I just wish he were 2 or 3 inches taller. He looks so small out there, and the release isn't quick enough. I wonder if he's going to be able to increase the volume of his three-point percentages, you know, simply because of those reasons. So that's what I'd like to know.
So you're declaring yourself at peace with Eric Gordon, huh?
Not the salary, but I don't cringe anymore with him as a player, and especially going into the system. I'm fine with him as a player, but I still am of the mind that you could get very similar production from Anthony Morrow for 1/5 the price. So I'll always have a issue with the price tag.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'm sorry. I'm not on the Eric Gordon bandwagon or even really wanting him around. He might be able to do certain things that make him not odious to me, but I just take a look at what he did against Golden State, and I don't remember the numbers exactly, but I think like one game he had 29 and in the same number of minutes, he had like five in another game.
Right.
It's just inconsistent. He doesn't do anything else for you.
If you got that from your $3 million player, Anthony Morrow, you would say, great, we got the 29 in a playoff game. So it's really about the price tag.
He'd be my Dellavedova.
Oh, gosh. I'm so glad the finals are. There's nothing that frustrates me more than the overreaction when we only have one game to digest.
I actually saw people seriously talking about wanting to bring Dellavedova in at a mid-level exception.
Oh, yeah. No, after game three, he was a mid-level player and Draymond Green was losing tens of millions of dollars, according to the narrative. Like, it drives me crazy when we only have one basketball game to dissect for 3 days and everybody makes that a referendum on where the future of basketball is. I'm so glad that finals is over. But
it is true, though, that if you have the chance to bring in a guy with a 9 PER for the season for $4 or $5 million a year, got to do it.
Oh, you jump at it. I mean, nothing against Dellavedova, but if he tried to play that style for the regular season, he would be literally dead by December.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, you could play more small ball and all of that stuff, and you could play when, first of all, you have timeouts every 8 seconds, it seems like, and then you have 2 or 3 days rest between every game. So, whatever, I'm glad that's over, and now every decision isn't being made based on what we saw in the last finals game. But last thing before we move on. So at this press conference tomorrow, it won't only be Gentry. You would expect Dell Demps to be there. What question would you ask him if he's knocked up with the truth serum?
Well, it would have to do with one of our later pieces and the draft. So we'll wait till then. But I would like to know if he has any plans to get into the draft. Just because I'm stupid. And I love the draft, man. I love it. Not having draft picks hurts.
Yeah. But do you think even Dell knows right now? I mean, I think we both agree that Dell's not sitting there going, under no circumstance am I getting into the draft.
I'm 100% certain he's got some. Like, he is 100% sure, like, has in his head, I am going to be in the draft or not at this point.
Oh, I don't believe that at all.
I do. Like,
it's going to happen.
He's going to have, I just can't see somebody like calling up a team that has no other draft picks as like their reasonable draft partner in like any of the draft day dealings that goes on. Like, if he doesn't have a plan right now where he's like, all right, if this player is ready at 15, I have this deal with you. He's not going to have it when the draft starts. He's going to be out of the draft if he doesn't have that already. I'm convinced, but
that's not what I'm saying. I think, of course, he has scenarios where, like, for instance, it looks like the Celtics and Lakers would just be willing to straight up sell picks 27 or 28.
Okay.
And I can imagine a scenario in which he's going, if one of these six guys is on the board, you know, I've got the okay from Tom to spend $2.5-3 million and I'll do it. Like, I think that's possible. But I don't think right now he would bet his life that he's either going to be in the draft or not. That's what I was saying.
Okay.
All right. So, yeah, it'll be an interesting, you know, press conference tomorrow. Hopefully we'll even get more assistance announced over the next
week. Wait. You can't dodge that. You have to ask, what is your one question you would have Dell answer 100%
truthfully? 100% truthfully? Well, I would ask him what his, you know, if he was lining up, if he was putting moves in place for 2016. Because, and I don't know, so I don't think,
heading towards one of your pieces from this week.
Yeah, and I don't think this is anything wrong to announce. I know the team isn't probably going to announce it. Maybe they'll announce it tomorrow, but it seems like, but Dell Demps has gotten his contract extended beyond this upcoming year. So he has a little bit more job security now. He has a couple years left on his contract now with this new extension. So I think he's in a place where this summer, you know, if he really wanted to, he could set moves up for 2016 or 2017 where he doesn't have to worry about some kind of referendum on his job for this season. So I would really ask him if, you know, if he was lining stuff up for a chance of taking a big swing in future years, or if he's going to try to take a big swing this year.
Right. That's a pretty good one, actually. All right. So next, let's just jump right to your piece, because I know that caused quite a stir. I think it generated more likes than I've ever seen. And I can't really blame you, because I actually have been like thinking about this myself. I think I mentioned the idea of why not dream about this, like maybe on the podcast, you know, a month or two ago. But you put a piece out there, and it was well done, because it wasn't just the, hey, stupids, why aren't you thinking of New Orleans as a place for Durant? Anthony Davis is here. It was more of a, if you want this to happen, these are all the things you have to do to make it even possible. So you have it's a 10-step plan.
I don't know.
You should have named it like the 10 steps to Durant or something. So before we even talk about this, like I want your just gut feeling. What is the percentage chance that today, without even knowing what we're going to have happen this next year, that Durant could be a New Orleans Pelicans next to Anthony Davis?
I would say 10 to 15%. I would say, to me, the favorites are Oklahoma City and Washington. After that, there is no team more likely than New Orleans. I think the next tier is like New Orleans and then the two LA franchises. But I think those are the five teams. I mean, if you look at it, first of all, if they don't make the finals this year, I don't know how Durant comes back. All those years, they still hadn't won a championship. They've only been to one finals. You know, Westbrook would be a free agent the next year, and, you know, you would think that Durant would get worried about that. If they don't make the finals, I don't know how he comes back. So that is one step to just crossing them off the list. Now you got Washington as the favorite, but the last two superstars that we saw left to join other superstars, other top five players at different positions. I don't know if Durant is about titles. Yeah, Washington will have a nice little deep team, and Wall is a nice player.
Sort of.
Yeah, but if you're talking about a potential dynasty, and I don't think that's a word that, you know, is thrown around lightly, but if you want to have the not two, not three, not four, not five possibility, there would be nobody else on the landscape that you could achieve that with than the guy who, again, I think he's going to be the MVP of the league next year. If not, by the end of the year, he will be consensusly the top player, or the guy who's going to be the top player by the following year. You know, he's a humble guy. He won't mind sharing the ball or even letting Durant be the number one guy. Like, it wouldn't even be an issue. The Pelicans will play a faster pace, which I still don't get the Billy Donovan hiring in Oklahoma City, and then they bring Monty in as well. I don't think that he's going to enjoy playing basketball as much. To me, if you could cross Oklahoma City off the list, which is obviously dangerous to do, but let's say Durant leaves, I would say Washington, because it's his hometown and because it's the East, where, you know, at least seems a lot easier to win. But I wouldn't put anybody else ahead of them. I don't think it's crazy, and I don't think Demps has to sacrifice that much to put himself in a position to make the pitch. And that's really all you could do. You can't make a player's mind up for him, but you could put the best pitch down possible. And if Drew Holiday returns from injury, has another Drew Holiday season. Anthony Davis, you know, you're going to have cap room in future. I don't know who can make a better pitch than New Orleans if we're just talking about winning over the next 10 years for Durant.
Yeah, I can't disagree with that. The only other team – so I did actually try to sit around and, like, look at teams that will be having space clear up that could possibly get in on the conversation. And there are a couple others, like Chicago. If you consider Chicago's team to be pretty impressive, they're in the East. If they have a couple good runs, they would have people coming off the books that would allow them to be able to do something like this. I don't know, of course, at all what Durant's feeling is toward Washington and how much he loves it or not. I look at the Washington Wizards team, and the sales pitch to me is pretty crappy, actually. Like, Nene and Gortat have long contracts on them that are high priced, and they're going to be both those guys are going to be declining. And so you're really selling him on Beal and Wall. And I'm sorry, if I'm looking at the landscape and I'm deciding where to go and I'm going to team myself up with a superstar point guard and I'm Durant, I'm staying put. Like, Russell Westbrook versus Wall isn't even a conversation to me. I'm taking Westbrook anytime, any minute, any day, especially if I have like a long, you know, term relationship with him that they seem to get along pretty well. So why go somewhere else to a lesser point guard when you're struggling to get over the top with the point guard that you have who's already a superstar? So then I look around too, and not only is Anthony Davis going to be a guy who's going to be willing to give up the ball, but you're not even putting yourself in a situation where you aren't the primary ball handler. Like, if he goes to Washington or even just stays in Oklahoma City, he isn't the primary ball handler, and that makes him not the primary perimeter threat. He comes to New Orleans, and it's him and Anthony Davis running pick and rolls all day, and he's got the ball in his hands, and he's the James Harden of that team. And, yeah, we're probably going to have Drew Holiday or somebody who can bring the ball up for him and help him get in places, but there isn't, like, another premier perimeter player who there's got to be give and take with. It's we've just got these two deadly long-armed forces that one's a perimeter and one's an interior player, and we're going to destroy you with them. It just seems like a much better fit to me.
Yeah, and I would definitely agree if New Orleans was in the East. But, again, you look at LeBron getting to finals.
All right. That's crazy.
With, like, nobody on his team in the East. So I think from that stand, I mean, if I'm Washington, if I'm going to be a Washington blogger or fan right now, I'm saying my two selling points are hometown, but even stronger than that is the fact that all you've got to do is be better than terrible, and you could get out of the Eastern Conference. And then once that happens, anything could happen if, you know, the West is beat up on itself. So I actually think that's Washington's stronger selling point is, yes, a team with Beal and Wall would be inferior to a team with Westbrook and Ibaka, but that inferior team could get to the finals in the East, where the superior team might not crack the second round in the West.
I had a question for you based after watching these playoffs and how awful the Eastern Conference playoffs were. I mean, to me, like, I couldn't watch half those games. They were so bad. If the New Orleans Pelicans, and I no changes, this year's New Orleans Pelicans had been in the Eastern Conference, how many of those Eastern Conference teams do you actually think were better than them?
By the time the season ended, 0-1. You know, Atlanta was better for most of the season, and Chicago before they just got run down, Thibodeau style, you know, were a better team in, say, January, February, whatever. But in the playoffs, I would take the playoff Pelicans over anybody. And I would actually like to see, you know, them have gone head-to-head with the Cavs. I think it would have been pretty close.
Yeah. I mean, that's ridiculous. Like, how is that possible that, like, I don't disagree that the Pelicans were probably in reality, the seventh best team in the Western Conference. I think they are better than the Dallas Mavericks by the end of the season. But other than that, I think every team other was better than them. They were a better team. And like, so how is it possible that the seventh best team in a conference is probably better than every team in the other conference? Like, that, just fix it. Like, come on. I'm tired of that.
Yeah, I don't know what they could do, though. And I mean, the West.
I don't even care if you just keep the same games going against each other. And sure, the Western Conference plays each other more, which artificially will depress somebody's winning team. Just throw them all in the playoffs and let them all sort it out. And like, that would have ended up with the Pelicans going up against, you know, a Eastern Conference team they would have destroyed. And like, we would have had all those crappy Eastern Conference teams, you know, no matter what seed they were, would have been chunked out pretty quick. And we would have been down to the good teams. And we wouldn't have like a disaster like Clippers versus San Antonio in round one, and when those are clearly, in my opinion, the second and third best team in the entire league.
Yeah, but if you didn't have crappy Eastern Conference teams in the NBA, in the NBA playoffs, then what are you going to put on NBA TV?
That's true.
Like, then you're going to have to put a good series on there, and half the people aren't going to get to watch it. So that's
you always have Memphis. Poor Memphis.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah, I mean, is Durant coming to New Orleans? No idea. I will say that LeBron to Miami was not the favorite 12 months before it happened. Dwight to Houston, they were not the favorite 12 months before it happened. All you could do, I think the Pelicans, what they need to concentrate on is, you know, making sure they stay flexible enough, which, you know, I think is very doable. You know, having AD take that next step into the serious MVP conversations, which, you know, I think happens, have him, you know, recruit Kevin Durant and Rio, over next summer, and then play a fun, exciting type of basketball that, you know, other players around the league, you know, see them having fun, see them jumping up on the sidelines, see them enjoying playing the game, because I have a strong suspicion that Oklahoma City, they might win a lot this year, but there's going to be rough patches and they're not going to have a lot of fun. I mean, Nick Kalathis hated playing for Billy Donovan. I mean, he's a guy who I've never seen have a problem with anybody else, and he hated Billy Donovan. You know, so I don't know if they're going to have a ton of fun in Oklahoma City. So I say you do those three things and you're in as good of a position as anybody. So I wouldn't center my whole franchise around planning on getting Durant in 2016, but I think it's pretty easy to put yourself in the room and make a great pitch.
Yeah. All right, so let's move on to another piece that's shown up on our blog in case you missed it, because I, you know, I really like the piece, but I want to get your take on it. So our boy Graham McQueen wrote the little bit about Ryan Anderson. There's a lot of people out there who really like the idea of Ryan Anderson playing in an Alvin Gentry. They make the obvious point of, hey, he could be Channing Frye in Phoenix, who, you know, just blew up out there. And so what do you there's a lot of good points in here. There's a lot of statistical information. You should take a look at it. But it boils down in the end to whether or not A, he will bounce back to what he was before, and B, that Gentry will be able to then unlock him even better, get him better assisted shots and so on. Do you think let me do it again. What is your percentage chance that both of those things will happen if Ryan Anderson is back next year?
95%.
Wow.
But my caveat is, I don't even think that's all that important. And it wasn't just Gentry. I have said consistently that with a healthy offseason, I think Ryan Anderson and his shot would be back. I think people are putting way too much emphasis on that. Because if he is still the defender that we saw at the end of the season, I don't even know if Ryan Anderson, the offensive weapon he was, is worth enough to get heavy playing time if he's that bad of a defender, because this team is going to be able to score. I don't think that's going to be an issue if teams, whenever Ryan Anderson is on the court, put him in the pick and roll literally every possession and he looks absolutely terrible. Why doesn't he become David Lee for this team? Where, yeah, David Lee, he didn't really lose anything offensively. Still a great,
you stole my point.
Still a great passer, still a good low post guy, but he was so bad defensively that it didn't matter. So people are worrying about Ryan Anderson's shot and will that return and will we be able to get him more assisted? I've never worried about that. To me, it's all going to be about whether he could be solid enough defensively.
Yeah. I mean, you actually made the exact reference I was going to make, which is we just watched an NBA champion that had spot minutes in its rotation for David Lee. And the reality of Ryan Anderson is how much more impactful of a player it, like, if you go look at when David Lee was signed by the Golden State Warriors and even his first few years there, he got an all-star nod even. Like, you go look at his numbers, he is an efficient scorer. Like, Ryan Anderson was an efficient scorer at his best. He was had great true shooting percentage. David Lee did too, and he rebounded better than Ryan Anderson ever did. But there was no room for him in that rotation. Now, the Pelicans' rotation is not going to be as developed as that hyper-deep rotation we saw in Golden State, but doesn't that still mean when the chips are down that Ryan Anderson playing doesn't necessarily matter as much? I think you got to say that.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's tough because, and as that piece even pointed out, it's not even Ryan Anderson hitting that makes your offensive better, just him being on the court. It's going to make your offense better too. So it's really going to be one of those situations where he doesn't have to be a stellar defender at all. I think he has to be a little quicker laterally. I would expect that the hedging is going to be gone with Irman.
There is never any reason for him to be doing
that.
That always made, like, he was the least mobile of our big men defenders, and the fact that he was the only one still left out there hedging never made sense to me.
Yeah, and I don't, if he ices and forces guards to shoot the 15, 17 footer, I could live with that if he's bombing threes on the other end or spacing. I actually don't mind him as a post defender either, especially pre-injury. So that's going to be the big thing for me, and that I don't know how to quantify. I mean, Ryan Anderson has been saying that he's going to get back into the best shape of his life. He's committed to this year. I fully believe it. I have no doubt that offensively this team is going to be great with him on the court, and his numbers will steady out more between home and away. It's just, you know, I don't think offense is going to be this team's problem. So can he give you enough defensively to warrant 25 to 30 minutes? So that'll be the thing with me. But, yeah, I have no doubt that his offense will be back on track.
Okay. I'm not certain if I 100% believe that, but, you know.
Yeah.
He did suffer some pretty serious injuries. Like, some of those things you just don't come back from.
But he did – the thing that I've always been optimistic about is he did at home, and then, right, like, you watch that game three in the playoffs, like, that's the same Ryan – so if somebody is capable of it, you know, and multiple times – then I believe that they're capable of extending that. It was just, to me, it was just, it looked like his legs were weak. He just wasn't in great shape. So I think the least surprising thing of the week, though we heard that Gordon was looking around to see if he could possibly get a long-term deal prior to opting in, he did opt into his final year, $15.5 million. With the Pelicans, I guess now that it's official, what do you see as the ramifications of this? What do you think of it in general? Did you ever have any doubt that he was going to opt in?
No. So, like, I always was trying to talk myself into it at the back of my head, like, maybe he won't opt in. Because then that would make the team a a free agency player. Like, we could actually have gone after some of the bigger names out there, which it's always fun to dream that, oh, we'll be able to go after this guy. But in the end, like, there's no way. Like, I would be surprised if he wasn't able to go out there and get, like, some sort of 3-year, $26 or $27 million deal, like, told that's what we would go for if you opt out. But then you just got to go home and say, look, I can make $15.5 million this year, and next year, probably that same deal at least is going to be on the table, and probably better ones. So why on earth would you ever make that decision not to take the 15? Like, that doesn't make any sense to me. It's not like you're Richard Jefferson and you're 33 years old and you're turning down a $13 million payday for $40 million. That's not the case here. And that's what Jefferson did with the Spurs back a few years ago. So it doesn't surprise me at all. And, you know, I'm not even that upset about it. And I guess I have to thank you for that, because I do comfort myself that the very fact that Eric Gordon is on this team for the next season, it makes the team much less likely to make the big moves that would make it impossible for the other amazing thing that you've talked about to happen with Durant. So thank you for that. You allowed me to sleep at night.
Yeah, and I mean, if Gordon is on this team, I think I said it in a couple podcasts ago, if Gordon is on this team, I think that he and Norris Cole are basically a package deal. I could see if Gordon would have opted out, you know, you could have seen a scenario in which the Pelicans didn't offer Cole the qualifying offer and then became a player in free agency. But now, you know, it would be almost pointless to deny that qualifying offer, because they're going to be a team that's operating over the cap anyway.
Assuming that they keep a Sheik.
Yeah, but I mean, even if they were to get rid of Cole and a Sheik, like, they still wouldn't have very much room when you consider cap holds, and now,
like, $8 million or something like that.
Yeah, but now they would have two, and then they would lose their mid-level, they would lose their biannual, so you would pretty much end up with about the same amount of money. Yeah, a little more, but the same amount of money, but now you would be missing a backup point guard and a starting center, so it just wouldn't make any sense. There was another intriguing, I don't know if it's an option, but an intriguing thing to discuss. A little after Gordon picks up that extension, there's rumors out there that Cleveland would like to turn Brandon Haywood's non-guaranteed contract and the 24th pick into a quote-unquote playmaker. Now, that package I don't think is going to be able to fetch much quality, but I'm going to take you through a couple of guys. You tell me, if you would trade this guy for Brandon Haywood in the 24th pick, would, if Cleveland said, we need spot-up shooting around LeBron, give us Eric Gordon for Haywood in the 24th pick, what would you say?
Yes.
Okay, and then,
I wouldn't hesitate. And again, it's not that I think that the 24th pick and Haywood is going to do better than what Eric Gordon can give my team. It's that now I have all that money to spend on something else.
And I mean, but you brought this up as well. Let's say that now with that money you could get a Damare Carroll or a, trying to think of another small forward. Tobias Harris. Let's say that you could do that now, but now that eats into your cap room next year and your spot open for Kevin Durant. Would you do that? Would you take the bird in the hand now, or would you use that freed up money on maybe guys on 1-year deals and still go with the Durant plan?
Well, I mean, the names like Harris and Carroll are not, I don't think that they're the missing piece on this team. So I would think about that pretty hard before I do it. But I'll just put it this way, like if Durant is there next year, like Miami didn't sit there and have this not get in the conversations because they didn't have the cap space to hire all those people or to draft all those people. Why am I saying draft? To sign all three of the big three that summer. They basically just got on the table, got in the conversation, found out he was interested, and then made it happen. Same thing with LeBron this summer. Like, if you get in that conversation and maybe you've signed Tobias Harris to a pretty nice deal, and you know, next year you find out I can actually be in the conversation for Durant. Well, you know what? Durant is such a prize. You put anything you need to in that deal with Tobias Harris to get him off your cap. If that's the last piece, like last bit of space you need, like you give away a first round pick. You do like, just like Houston did it this summer. Houston was going after Bosch and they put a first round pick with Jeremy Lin to get rid of him so that they could have the space to sign Bosch. It didn't work out for them, but if I was Dell Demps and I was in that same situation and I could have brought in Bosch for that team, for the team, you know, without Anthony Davis. And it cost me a first round pick to make the space. I make that move if I think I've got a chance of winning him. Yeah. So same thing as Durant.
Yeah. Like, I mean, I'm sure if you signed,
I still make the moves.
If you signed Tobias Harris this year, I think he's like 23 at this time next year. I'm sure you could give him away. Yeah. And so what about the same deal for Tyreek?
He's not as big of a number. I'd have to actually look at like what that means for cap space. Cause honestly, like the number one reason I want to clear the cap space is I want to see that if they're going to do that, I want them to go for the big swing. I don't know if you are in that kind of mode where you might be in the, oh, bring in two mid-priced guys who are going to fill in these big gaps on our team. And we go, but I would like to see them on the table with DeAndre Jordan saying, hey, here's a big contract. Come on over and make the big swing. So I'd have to look and see if Tyreek Evans would get me there. And if he plus something else would get me there, then I would probably consider it. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, just imagine that you had, if your perimeter positions right now were Drew, Eric Gordon, Pondexter, and Norris Cole. That's all you had. Your perimeter guys, like what, how would you fill out, let's say, those other two spots?
Oh God. That sounds so thin.
But I mean, like, ideally, Quincy Pondexter is probably a backup three, right? Who could play a little bit of two.
Yeah.
Norris Cole, I think what ideally you'd like to play him 18 to 20 minutes a game at the one and two positions.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you're looking for a starting three who could maybe play some small ball four. And
yeah, I'm trying to grab someone like Damari Carroll, or I'm hoping that maybe Portland falls apart and I can swing a deal for Batum or something like that.
Like even another catch and shoot shooting guard wouldn't be too bad, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, to me.
And I'm sure we're going to, I should mention this. You've been pimping Marcus Thornton on Twitter.
Yeah.
Is that your ideal catch and shoot shooting guard backup guy?
No, I just,
at a small deal?
No, I mean, I always like I like taking a shot at one reclamation project a year. Anthony Morrow hit, Jimmer Fredette didn't. But you look at the catch and shoot numbers. Marcus Thornton is as good a shooter as anybody out there. He's a guy that, you know, has been passed around because he's not worth the $8-9 million on his contract, but yeah. Now he's going to fall back down to earth. You could probably get him for $2 million a year. Maybe that humbles him. Combine that with Gentry's offense. You know, I think Darren Erman would be able to either vouch for him or not. He would have worked with him recently. So,
I mean,
to me, it's at least an interesting thing to consider. Again, if I think I've said on this podcast like 10 or 15 times that I think 27, 28 years old is when most men in general, not just basketball, kind of mature. Maybe Marcus Thornton humbles himself, matures, and if he agrees to be just a spot-up guy, you could get some serious value if you could get him at like $2 million. So,
And then I could revive that old video I made where he was a star.
He's a beat, yeah. I mean, and then you look at the Robert Pack connection, which I didn't discuss when it came to Durant, but there's a Durant connection right there. But Pack was also very influential in Thornton's rookie year, so maybe he could bring him back in line. So, yeah, he's a guy that I kind of got my eye on. But, yeah, going back to the main point, the Tyreek Evans for Haywood and the 24th pick, you know, that's tempting. And, again, it's really not about the pick. It's about what that flexibility does. So, and they could even do it later in the year. I think you could do that Haywood trade all the way up to like August 2nd. And if you did it later, you could create an exception that the Pelicans could use next summer. Like, there's a lot of interesting things that you could do, but it's one to consider. How about the same trade for Ryan Anderson?
I mean, it falls into the same thing I said with Tyreek. I'd have to look at what that means salary-wise.
It really get us.
Yeah, I mean, he's $8 million, right? So it's not, you're not going to get a whole lot more room out of that. You'd basically have to, you know, also get rid of all the other players that we have in order to make enough room to be able to go, you know, just get that one piece, and then you're pretty thin again.
Yeah.
So I'd have a little bit of trouble with that one, but it's, I mean, like, if you're talking to me about who are, you just basically ran through the three most tradable players on the team, in my opinion.
Yeah. One more little one. What would you think of just a straight up two restricted free agents, a Norris Cole for a Mon Shumpert swap? Norris Cole gets to play with his buddy LeBron, who would obviously welcome him back. You know, Shump comes here. Maybe it's,
Is he a free? No, they're both restricted right now.
Yeah, let's say they both just sign for the purpose of this, sign their qualifying offers, get traded for each other, and they're looking to hit Bonanza the following year.
I think Shumpert is more valuable than Cole. I just have a feeling that his salary demands will probably be double or triple what Cole expects. So I'd rather have Cole at the reduced amount than Shumpert at that high a dollar.
Well, I wouldn't expect either of them to be on the team in 2016-17. I'm just saying, for next year, if you could have one guy for 1 year, who would you rather have?
I would take Shumpert.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think he's a better player. Because he's had this especially recent finals exposure, I think, you know, he's one of those guys who's going to do the Tyronn Lue thing where suddenly he's going to land a mid-range contract when, you know, he's probably not worth quite that much.
Yeah, I'm really curious to see how free agency shakes out. I think with the way it's going, there's going to be a couple of guys who get those contracts that just make you question what is life. But then there'll be a couple of guys who we expect to get paid also that might just sign qualifying offers and go into the next year. But that leads us up to, so we talked about a couple pieces on the site. You guys also did some stuff on the draft.
Yep.
I guess it's, you know, this time of year we don't have a pick, which makes you sad. I know that we love talking draft on here, but I guess I'll just start off in general. Forget about the Pelicans even, just for this question, but who do you just love from this draft as a prospect?
So, I don't think there's any question that Towns is the best player in the draft. I mean, if I was in charge of the Pelicans before Anthony Davis and I had that team where I was just trying to start something, anything, please, Towns is the guy you take. You just got to take that guy. Talking Pelicans specifically, or even just how I think it's a really close discussion, at least for me, for D'Angelo Russell. I really think that Towns is probably, like, in my book, 5% better than D'Angelo Russell, and those two guys are then, you know, D'Angelo Russell's another 15% better than anybody else in the draft. Russell is the 100% surefire guard to me. I think that anyone who takes him is going to get a future all-star. And if somehow the Pelicans had made a trade and like they did the Cleveland thing and they lucked into the first pick of the draft, I would be saying, okay, I'm taking Towns. You know, teams 3 and 4, give me your best. Here's your third pick plus whatever else. And if I like your other else, you can have Towns and I'll take Russell and whatever else you give me. Cause I think Russell is going to be that good of a player. So he's the guy that I'm salivating over. I did the same thing back when James Harden was coming out, and maybe I was wrong cause Curry was also in that draft and I thought Curry was going to be a bust. I just couldn't see him being able to take the physical rigors of the NBA. But Harden had all the same markers. Their numbers looked so similar. I think Russell's going to be amazing.
Do you think, like, better than Lillard? Like, I'm trying to figure out how good you think he's going to be.
I think he's going to be better than Lillard. Absolutely. Because he's doing essentially at age 19 what Lillard was doing at age 22. Hmm. Or maybe 21. That might be a bit unfair to Lillard. But Russell, I think, is going to be a much better prospect. I can't say anything about defense. It's hard for me to ever figure out how a 19-year-old's going to develop defensively. And he is pretty poor defensively, Russell is. I think he's going to be so talented offensively. He's in the Kyrie Irving, Lillard. I think Kyrie Irving is actually a pretty good comparison, better than Harden, because I keep going to Harden because I just looked at their numbers and they're so close. I think Kyrie Irving's going to be a pretty good comparison for Russell. And I don't know where Russell's defense is going to go. We know where Irving is, and it sucks. But Russell might actually figure it out.
So if you were the Lakers, you would take him over Okafor for sure.
In a second.
Yeah. It's not
even a conversation to me.
I agree. I actually feel more that way about Moutier. I know he's not a guy that you would love, mostly because of the shooting. But, God, I mean, I look at him and I see it's so confusing to me. I agree with you on Towns. You kind of have to take him. But, like,
I almost want to not take. I almost want to have the balls to say, forget Towns, get Russell.
Yeah, I just don't understand. We watch year after year lately that it's about the perimeter guys. And, you know, we're seeing the big guys getting taken off the floor in key moments. Unless they're a once-in-a-generation talent like a Tim Duncan or obviously Anthony Davis is never going to be taken off the floor. I think Towns, because he could hit the jumper, is a guy you don't have to worry about that for. But who in the last couple finals have looked anything like Jahlil Okafor? I don't understand how we're still going to take the traditional center over, you know, the guards. But Moutier is a guy I love. I think, you know, the shooting, it's been documented that that's the thing most likely to improve. Granted, some guys never do. But if that's my one concern and I'm looking at a guy with that kind of size and speed and intelligence and defensive capabilities, like Moutier would be the same way you probably feel about Russell. I still think that this Pelicans team, and the guy might be on the roster in Jrue Holiday, but I still think that as good as Anthony Davis is going to be, they're going to need somebody with the ball in their hands that is all-star, you know, level player in order to be talking about championships and multiple championships. And, you know, again, maybe Durant's that guy or get somebody in free agency in a trade, whatever. But I think that would be my next goal as Dell, is I would say by the end of July of 2016, I want to have a guy who either at that point or is projected to be an elite perimeter player to pair with Anthony Davis, be the Kobe to his Shaq, be the Magic to his Kareem, et cetera. And to me, Moutier is the guy that I would salivate over him and Anthony Davis running in transition and running pick and rolls.
Yeah, my only problem is I haven't seen enough Moutier to be able to say that. I actually did take a look at these things. And I will say that if you read an account of what he did in China during the actual playoffs, and if you know anything about how insane those Chinese playoff games are, like the people who go to those, I don't know if people have a grasp of the amount of noise and how crazy that gets. I remember stories of one of those games where Yao Ming was there during some finals, and there were people in the stands heating up coins and throwing them at the other team's players to try to burn them. I mean, that's how crazy the crowd is. And this guy who'd been on the bench because of injury was activated and had to play in the two most pressure-packed playoff games of his life suddenly. And he handled it well. So you got to say something about that. But I haven't seen enough of him otherwise.
It sounds like the crowds in those Jean-Claude Van Damme movies like at the end when he's in the cage or like they're surrounding him with cars. Like, it sounds brutal. Yeah, no, he's just a guy that, to me, could be like, I don't see him with that Russell Westbrook, Derrick Rose pre-injury explosiveness, but I see John Wall, but bigger, smarter, and like Wall, he'll have to hit the three, but
figure it out.
So before we go back to some of the elite players, it's hard to talk about this draft and not, you know, obviously acknowledge that we don't have the 18th pick because of the Ashiq trade. It's long and gone, but, you know, imagine that we did have the 18th pick in this draft. Are there any guys that might get called around that range that, you know, if they do get called, you'll be pissed and say, man, I wish we had the 18th pick because I think that guy is going to be a special player?
No, just flat out no. I mean, I look at the draft, I look at these guys, I look at their numbers. There are guys there who, you know, I think will be valuable backups or have the potential to possibly be an all-star, but they've shown absolutely nothing of it actually on the court that will be being picked in that area. But I don't see any, like, I don't see anybody in there that I would flat up trade Ashiq next season, whatever he's going to be, or even last year's Ashiq for these guys. Like the guys we're talking about are, you know, like Tyus Jones, Kevin Looney, those are like the best ones, the ones that I'd be kind of interested in a pick around that time. Maybe Hollis Jefferson. But it's not, they're not, there's no, is there somebody there that you're going to think is going to fall to that point where you're going to be like, that guy is going to come in and be as valuable as a 24-minute a game center?
No, but I mean, I would say there's maybe one or two guys that I think 3 years down the line could be a special piece. The guy I keep looking at is Kelly Oubre from Kansas. I think if there's a guy who could be kind of Greek freakish in the middle of this draft, it could be him, where in a couple of years you start to see that he could be a special player. Overall, you're looking.
You, by the way, picked one of the guys that I absolutely would not want on this team.
Oh, why? Just why?
Everything that I saw and read about him just gives me the feel that maybe he doesn't love the game of basketball.
Yeah, like, and that I can't know without talking to the guy. So
right, but it's just like it feels that way to me. It feels like, you know, he has flashes. That's all you can ever get as the best, like, description of Oubre is he'll have flashes of greatness, but then you look at his numbers and they're so ordinary and they're like, oh, but he's got great physical tools, but he's I want to say it's probably a Julian Wright hangover. Like, Julian Wright had a better college career than Oubre did, but Julian Wright didn't want to play basketball for a living. It was not his interest. And he had the same physical tools as Oubre does. And, of course, there's also the Kansas thing going on here, too. So I just have this bad feeling about him. So he's one of those guys that I'm like, eh, no, thanks. Keep him over there.
Yeah, but if we could draft a guy that nets us Marco Bellinelli in 3 years, that'd be worth it. All right.
Give me what? Marco Bellinelli in 3 years? I don't think he's going to be good anymore. He's probably been 34 years old or so.
I'll take a shot at the one guy that I think you and I might both love.
Okay.
How do you feel about DeLon Wright?
I can't tell how much. Actually, I'm not going to say I love the guy. I think he's got all the potential in the world. And he's got the numbers to back him up. I'm not sure he's going to. He feels like a tweener to me. Am I wrong?
I agree, but doesn't Drew Holiday?
I guess, right. Yeah.
So, I mean, I'm thinking more about pairing those two together. And you want to talk about, I mean, giving Ermin a chance to match what he did with Avery Bradley and Marcus Smart, but possibly better with the defensive backcourt with those guys. Or at the very least, Wright could be your second unit point guard and just terrorize guys on the defensive end. You know, he could do some of the post-up things that Gentry did with Livingston this year. So, I don't know. That's a guy that, again, we talked a little bit before about the fact that some teams, it looks like some teams 25 through 30 might be just willing to sell their picks because these are guaranteed contracts. Teams are, you know, wanting to ratchet up to make runs at free agency at some guys. So I think you could get a pick 25 to 30 if you really want to. That would be a guy that would interest me. Obviously, there would be no spot for him with the way this roster is right now, but you know, he would be a guy that would intrigue me long term. Or again, you go and you make one move, and all of a sudden that's a nice little piece coming off your bench that maybe one day could start as well.
Yeah, so just so we have this conversation, because we actually kind of had a little one behind the scenes before, and, you know, there's always a fantasy out there that you know, Phil Jackson, he's, you know, 70, he's got Alzheimer's now probably or something. He loses his mind and he puts the fourth pick out there and suddenly the Pelicans can get it for Quincy Pondexter and a bag of chips. But that's not happening. So I want to get your idea, like, even if it's like the Kostas Ryan Anderson or Tyreke Evans or Eric Gordon, or like just the best tradable assets we have. Let's say Dell reverses course completely and he goes away from the young veteran thing, which is what he loves and what he talks about all the time, which is a number of reasons why I don't think we will see anything in this draft. But let's say he reverses course and he's willing to put one of those guys on the table. And what is the best, like, what range do you really think that would get us in this draft? Like, in previous years, like, you could probably have turned one of those guys in, like, 2 years ago when they said it was the worst draft around and gotten, like, you know, pick, like, 8 or 7 probably. But what do you think in this year's draft that would get you?
Oh, man. I think you could make the argument that there are certain – that maybe with the right packages and a third team involved, whatever, you could get – I think the 7th, 8th, 10th, 11th, and 12th picks are all – up for grabs.
So that's, you think Nuggets, Pistons, Heat, and Pacers are all looking?
And Jazz, yeah.
And Jazz, okay.
Yeah, I think Charlotte's the only team in there that is I think definitely keeps their pick. But so I think maybe somewhere in there is, if you really manipulate things and find the right trades, and I think you're going to have to take back, you know, salary too, and probably not great salary. Like, you go to Denver and they're going to make you take, you know, Daryl Arthur and Randy Foy, let's say.
Right.
Let's say a trade where it's like Tyreke and a future first round pick for 7. Let's assume that they've already traded Ty Lawson. So Tyreke and a future pick for 7, Arthur and Foy. I don't think Denver does that, but I don't think it's beyond the realm if, let's say, they have 2 or 3 guys and they're both gone by number 7 and they're not in love with any of the guys on the board.
Right.
So
then let's have like the intelligent conversation you should have if you're a GM. We know that the guys who are going to be being picked around 7, you can go look at Draft Express and other places like that. Like, the likelihood that Russell and Towns and probably Moutier are going to be off the table then. We can't talk about those guys. But you're still talking about potentially valuable-seeming players. Willie Cauley-Stein, Justice Winslow, Devin Booker, Stanley Johnson. There's a good number of names there that you probably would be available 7, 8, maybe 10. 10 might be a stretch, but maybe 10. Are any of those guys better than Tyreke Evans? Like, and I mean, not just today. I mean, 2 years from now, are any of those guys better than 50% chance of being better than Tyreke Evans?
Yeah, to me, there's two. There's two guys that I would give up anybody not named Anthony Davis and probably Drew Holiday for in that range. And that's the first two you mentioned. Willie Cauley-Stein and Justice Winslow. Cauley-Stein, to me, is just intriguing because if you have him and Davis at the 4 and 5, I just think you could play any kind of defense, anything. You could blitz, you could ice, you could, you know, soft hedge, hard hedge, like with those two guys in this NBA, when teams go to pick and roll, I think you could literally do anything. I think you could change it on the fly, give teams different looks. I think that if you got a guy like that, the possibilities on the defensive end are limitless. I think you could be maybe the best offensive rebounding team in the NBA in a couple of years. So Cauley-Stein would really intrigue me. And then Winslow, I think that if you just look at Winslow's numbers, you say he's ideal. I am a little nervous, though. I mean, Kevin Pelton put up a good piece about how you shouldn't just use three-point percentages to project how a guy is going to be a three-point shooter in the pro. It usually correlates a little more with free throw percentage. And yeah. Winslow's three-point percentage, it does seem to be a bit of a fluke. He wasn't thought to be that guy coming into Duke. And then you look at his free throw percentage, which is only 64%. I think he gives you everything that you need if you expect him to shoot the three ball at that level in the NBA, but I personally don't. But I still think he's a fantastic prospect that would be a terrific fit on this team. I just don't think he would necessarily be, you know, ideal what his numbers might project. But those would be the two guys that I would be willing to give up almost anything for, not named Anthony Davis and probably Jrue Holiday.
Wow. Yeah, I actually struggle with that. Like, Winslow is probably the only one I would really seriously consider it. I don't know. I just something, and Winslow worries me, and for the same kind of reasons. Like, I love him for all the reasons why I loved MKG, but MKG was actually a more effective scorer in transition and some other ways as well. I think Winslow has all the same fire and physical attributes and abilities that you'd want at the small forward, and clearly he's going to be the guy who could play without the ball and just be the 3-and-D guy you need. So I would be interested, like, as a ideal piece for the team as we vision it, he's pretty fantastic. But is that definitely worth more than Tyreek Evans, who in certain situations could be pretty fantastic himself? I'm not sure. So, yeah, I have a hard time going and wanting to make one of those trades.
But it's not just that. It's again, going into 2016, that guy would be making like $3 million
a year. Right.
So it's that guy plus $8 million.
Right, which is why I have the stupid fantasy about Frank Kaminsky.
Oh, you're dreaming about the Frank the Tank, huh?
And it's to me, like, so just the base premise that I have here, and you tell me if this is stupid. Do you feel that Frank Kaminsky could be 100% of healthy Ryan Anderson in the NBA?
I think Channing Frye is a way better comparison. I don't think Kaminsky has the quick release. I don't think he's ever going to have kind of the cleverness that Ryan Anderson has, but I think he could be maybe a high post facilitator. Like, I just think their games are different. I know that their skin pigment is the same, but I think that their games are different. But if you said Channing Frye, I would go more along with that.
Okay, well then let's take that a step further. Would you rather have Ryan Anderson or Channing Frye on this team?
So Channing Frye in his prime and Ryan Anderson now?
Yeah.
Probably Fry, just because he gives me a little bit more defending the rim.
Right. And so, I mean, I did a reductive argument when I said, you know, Frank Kaminsky's 100% to 110% of Ryan Anderson. I actually, like, I was going down the same route you were. I think I actually like a couple of things he does. Like, he's actually knows how to pass and do some things that Ryan Anderson doesn't do. Maybe he can do, but he doesn't do for us. As a shooter, I feel like Kaminsky's going to be as good. Then you just look at that and say, okay, well, Kaminsky is the same age as Anthony Davis and Anderson isn't. And Kaminsky is going to be on a contract where he's making probably $2 to $3 million a year, and Ryan Anderson is going to be five more, like eight or nine. Like, is there any more obvious, a clear upgrade? So if the price is, we trade Ryan Anderson for a pick that we then can use on Frank Kaminsky, do that every day of the week. Like, there's just no way not to do that.
when do you think Frank Kaminsky gets to be as good as Ryan Anderson or Channing Frye in his prime?
Next year.
Yeah.
I don't mean this season. I mean the season following.
I think it's going to take a little longer than that for him. I think it's going to be, because some of those things that you say, sometimes it's nice when a guy has less things in the toolbox. Because especially when you have so many dynamic players on the team, like, he can't utilize them anyway. So Ryan Anderson, yeah, it would be great if he was a better facilitator, but I like the fact that, you know, you kind of know who a guy is, and he does this great and he does that great, and that's it, as opposed to a guy having 7-8 things in the toolbox. But Frank Kaminsky on this Pelicans team will never be the number one or number two or maybe even number three option. So what do all those other things really get you? So I don't know. I think it would take Kaminsky a little longer. And I think that that's the weird line that Dell has to toe, is he both has to make this team better next year so that he could appeal to guys like, you know, Durant, but he's got to do it without giving up flexibility. You know, and Gentry, looking back on Gentry's history, like, he doesn't play rookies that much. I mean, I don't think I've ever found more than 800 minutes in his recent stops. So I just think that if you trade Ryan Anderson for Kaminsky, in essence, this year, you're going to take a step back. And again, if you want to be as good as possible so you can lure guys next year, I don't know. I don't think that's worth the risk, I guess I would say.
Okay. Is there anybody who, let's say we managed to get an end of lottery mid-range pick that, it, say, you know, we picked 15th, that you would be horrified going in that range, or not, or just like, just me seeing the Pelicans take Austin Rivers, falling stomach issues.
I don't know what Trey Lyles is supposed to be.
Okay.
I have no clue what he's supposed to be in the NBA or how he.
But he's tall.
Yeah, he's tall. I don't know. You know, it's very hard for me to sell myself on, you know, tremendous upside from him. Kevin Looney's another guy that just seems to me like the one that's going to get drafted because of his body, his length, his potential.
I actually like Looney's rebounding numbers. They look pretty good.
Can I take a guess at yours?
Fire away.
I'm going to guess RJ Hunter.
Yeah, he's slated to go a little later in the draft. But holy crap, like I have rarely seen a further separation between what I feel is reality and descriptiveness of a guy. Like, people talk about him like he's a shooter.
So explain to me how he shot, on the same number of attempts, high volume, 40% from three his sophomore year and 30% from three his junior year. I mean, which one do you think is more accurate, and what? Give me an explanation.
I honestly don't think either of them are accurate. I think he's probably more like a 35% shooter, which is garbage if you're drafting a shooter. Like, that's what, like, people say. You draft RJ Hunter to get a shooter. But there isn't anything in his career that says that he is definitely a shooter. And if I'm going for somebody who's definitely a shooter, I want somebody who's always been a shooter.
His free throw percentage says he is a shooter.
Yeah, his free throw percentage does, but
his first two seasons, he was 38% 3-point shooter going into his junior year. He's been an elite free throw shooter the last 2 years. I mean, obviously he has the ability and he has the stroke. I guess I wonder, what if his sophomore season would have been his junior season and vice versa? Let's say he shot 30% 2 years ago, and then this past year, now all of a sudden he's a 40% 3-point shooter.
I am more willing to accept an upward trajectory as they get older and stronger and more physical than a downward trajectory. So, I'll say that one. But I really do think you just got to take, like people kept talking about Lamb being an amazing shooter coming out of Connecticut, and he was average. Like, you look at his actual overall numbers, and I just didn't see it. And so I have the same kind of feeling about him.
No, I understand. I'm just saying, if you were looking at a guy who shot 40% from three this past year on eight attempts, and he was like an 88% free throw shooter his last 2 years, I think if you just knew those facts, let's say you knew nothing else, you would be like, oh my God, this is an elite shooter.
Yeah, okay.
But so something happened, and maybe he lost his touch. Maybe he just can't shoot anymore. I guess to me, if I had to bet, I think that in the NBA, when, you know, he doesn't have the responsibility he had at Georgia State to basically, you know, be their entire offense. I mean, the guy could obviously shoot the basketball. You don't have that many free throw attempts over the last 2 years and then a season or two where he shot the ball really great from three. I guess I just wonder if, like, we could flip these numbers around and it wasn't a recency thing if R.J. Hunter would be higher on your list.
No, I don't think so. I really don't. Like, that's one of the things is, like, there are all kinds of guys. Like, the other one thing I look for is they got to give me something else. Like, I can buy the idea of going out there and drafting a shooter, but that shooter has to give me one other thing. And his other thing is passing, but it's not amazing passing.
Yeah.
So I just don't go for that.
By two steals, one block a game from a shooting guard?
He's 22 years old. He should be overpowering dudes.
Well, I mean, Austin Rivers never would have.
That's true.
So is there somebody who scares you more that if we go up into that territory?
Well, you already said him. Kelly Oubre. He's mine.
Huh.
Something about him terrifies me. Stay away from me.
How do you feel about Rondé Hollis-Jefferson, where you're looking at a potential, I mean, you're looking at maybe the Tony Allen of small forwards. We talk about Tyreek Evans having trouble. Do you think Tony Allen would play for an Alvin Gentry team?
Yes. Yeah, I don't know if he'd start, but I think he'd definitely get minutes. And so Hollis Jefferson, you asked about him specifically. He is my polar guy. Like, I cannot decide on him. 1 minute I hate the idea of him, and 1 minute I love the idea of him. In my article, he was one of the people who I definitely don't want. If we, like, were picking at the end of, like, the, you know, in the top teens and low 20s, and he was there, I convinced myself, I don't want that guy. But now, like, I've convinced myself, like, I've swung back, and I'm like, yeah, I'd definitely take him if we had that pick and we were in there. Because, I mean, he's got all of the fury and grit that I love. But his offense is so broken. And so I have a hard time settling in my mind. Like, is he going to be that crippling or not?
And we keep talking about shooters, but is there any part of you that's intrigued by a low post player, especially if Anthony Davis keeps extending his range? Any interest in somebody who could maybe play a low post four for periods of a time with Davis at the five, who could give us some low post scoring? Or do you think that day is said and gone in the NBA?
I think that day is said and gone. That's why I would not take Okafor. Like, so let me ask you that question. Like, I have a number in mind. Where would you take Jahlil Okafor in this draft? Like, what draft position would you have to be in for you to decide there isn't really anybody above him that I would take?
Probably 7, 8, or 9.
Okay. Yeah, that's where I'm sitting.
Yeah, like, I would take him out of Stanley Johnson. I don't love Stanley Johnson. I would take him out of Booker. But, like, it would be a debate when you start getting into the Hezonja and Winslow versus Okafor.
You take Colin Stein over him?
It would really depend on the team. Like, if I'm Orlando, yeah. If I'm the Nuggets, yeah. It would depend on the team and what I have.
Yeah, I mean,
again, if Jahlil Okafor is a slightly better Al Jefferson, which I personally think that's his peak. I would be really curious to see Al Jefferson on a good team. Like, if he was on the Clippers instead of DeAndre Jordan, like, is he playing at the end of games? How's he being you? Like, I have no clue what an Al Jefferson, what kind of minutes he would get as we get deeper into the playoffs and at the end of games. So
there is, so this is all I would say about it is there is exactly one NBA player whose reputation is based on his post scoring and ability to score from the post, not his defense at all. His defense is not great, who is on a team that is legitimately good every year. So that we look at all the teams in the league, that one guy has managed to do that. That's Zach Randolph. Like, you, and it took him a long time to get to that point, and he had to be in the exact perfect situation for it to work for him. Do you want to have to build your team that way? And I think the answer's got to be no.
Yeah, but I mean, I'm glad that the Lakers are going to try with him, right? And Julius Randle. I mean, I really am. I'm honestly a little scared of Minnesota 3-4 years from now if they get one more stud, but I'll worry about
it. Oh, I know. Actually, I'm not entirely 100% sold on Wiggins as a superstar, but Towns and Wiggins is going to be a good. So.
Right, and if like, you know, Zach LaVine, and they do the right things at space if they get one more pick, but that's years down the road. What about, so we talked about players that we would trade. Team comes to you and says, hey, we don't really want to be in this draft. Give us next year's pick, top three protected, and we'll give you our pick. What's the range that you would be willing to give up a future pick to get into this draft? Or maybe not even a range, just tell me what player or players would have to be on the board in that range for you to do that. Would you give up a future top three protected first round pick for Justin Anderson?
No.
No.
Like, I'm honestly, I'll tell you how low I have to go in. I've spent so much time looking at the stupid draft class that I'm now to the point where I've, like, all the guys who are in the mid-range, I'm starting to pick out their defense. I mean, their defects more than their, you know, potential goodness.
Mm.
So I'm looking at people before I'd start even considering it probably be in the 15-16 range, which is stupid because I know that next year our pick is probably going to be around 20. So, you have to give up like a pick that's going to be slightly better to get one right now, you know?
Would you give it up for Sam Decker?
I'm not a big fan of Sam Decker, so he would not be. But, you know, people around him, like Tyus Jones, I like him, I'd consider it. I'm not 100% sold on him, but I'd consider it, yeah. So right around there, like something like, I think Decker, last time I looked, was projected to go like 18 or something like that, or 17, maybe a little higher. So yeah, around there.
You'd definitely give it up for Frank the Tank if he started falling.
Absolutely.
Oh boy. All right, and then, so just last, we know how this is going to go. The Pelicans, we're going to be sitting through like 3 hours of draft coverage. We're going to be looking at guys who, oh, I thought he was going to go 35, and he's still on the board at 52.
Yeah.
You know, we're going to get excited. Whoever the pick is, we're going to talk ourselves into, hey, that guy could be a rotation player. You know, this was a great pick, and we got him all the way at 56. Like, it's just what we do as fans. Let's get ahead of that so that way we could say that we're not Monday morning quarterbacks, that we were actually excited about the guy beforehand. Give me a guy or two or three that might be there around 56 that you could legitimately say that you would be quasi excited about and think have a chance to maybe make the roster and be a rotation player 2 years down the road.
I don't think he'll be available there, but there's potential. That big kid out of Kentucky, Johnson, Dakari Johnson, if he falls that far,
So the guy who literally can't jump over a telephone book, why are you excited about him?
Just his numbers looked really fantastic. Like, he has a chance, and he's really young. He has a chance.
No,
he's big.
Do you know what his max vert was at the combine? Don't look.
No. No idea.
Guess.
Well, so for a big man, so is a standing vert or actual running?
Max running.
Oh. So for a big man, like, I guess 33 would be pretty poor or average, low average.
Okay.
So you said it's bad. So 30?
25.
How is that possible?
I have no idea.
Maybe he needs to eat less cheeseburgers.
Yeah.
The other guys, and this is just, again, at this point, it is such a crapshoot, really. Like, none of these guys are really going to have much of a chance. I'm going to go with guys who reputation at least used to be fantastic, that they used to be somebody who everybody wanted. So I'm going to go for one of the Harrison twins also out of Kentucky.
Yeah.
Like, one of those guys got to have a chance to be something, right? They were, you know, what, like 2 and 3 in their draft class and everything.
Yeah.
And I know Roston Rivers was too, but.
I mean, the consensus seems to be that Andrew could be a rotation player in the league, but the other one.
Aaron, is it? I think.
Yeah, has no shot. Yeah, I mean, at those points, I mean, I kind of looked at the last, well, not kind of, I looked at the last 9 years and the guys who tend to make it picks 51 or later, and it seems to be guys who are 4 years out of high school, juniors and seniors, kind of mix of positions all over the board, either really athletic or have, you know, one transferable skill. I like a couple of guys. I think Tyler Harvey would be interesting. He's a shooter. Joseph Young out of Oregon, Larry Nance Jr. I think you've got to look, if a guy is going to have any chance and making this Pelicans team and being in the rotation in a year or two, I think that you're more likely going to get a 3 or 4 year guy with just one skill that he could bring to the table and be a rotation player. You know, and maybe they'll just be like what Justin Holiday was for the Warriors this year, and kind of just a spot player who could give a couple minutes here or there in a blowout or, you know, on a back-to-back, something like that. But, yeah.
I have an uncle who insists that kid out of Boston College is going to be amazing in the NBA.
Yeah, I mean.
Hamlin, I think his name is.
He was one that I had. He fits a lot of the profiles for the guys who do tend to make it in the second half of the first round, or second half of the second round. So, yeah, the one thing that doesn't seem to work, and it seems to be what people think we should do, is the draft and stash. If a guy is somewhat decent and he's a draft and stash, he's getting drafted at the end of the first or beginning of the second round.
Right.
Like, that's where the Miritich and all those guys get drafted. Like, the draft and stash, the only one in the past 10 years that has ever been a draft and stash, pick 50 or later, that has been somewhat decent is King Joffrey Lavernay or whatever for Denver. And even he's not great, but at least he's played in the league. But King Joffrey is the only one to have ever.
Is that, did they actually give him that nickname?
No, I did, but.
Okay.
Yeah, after.
Because he should own that. Like,
oh, he should. Yeah, for the wall.
That's right.
Yeah, so I don't know. I know how it'll be. Somebody will fall the way that Patrick Young fell last year. And, you know, I know we got a little excited about Russ Smith, and rightfully so. He was a good college player. But odds are, just purely objectively speaking, whoever we take at 56 will be a trivia question in 10 years and no more.
So what are the odds that we don't even have the 56 pick of the draft, that it just gets moved for something?
I actually think it's pretty small, just because these aren't the picks that teams usually buy.
They go for the 31st and 32nd.
Right,
picks,
yeah, or even in the low 40s. So these usually aren't the one. Like, I could see Dale Demps completely punting the pick, and picking somebody that he knows that he'll never bring over, or could just be a trade rights thing, or, you know, whatever. I could see him doing that, but moving it, I think the only way it gets moved is if it's a throw in for another pick, you know, like if they buy the Lakers pick and throw in the 56 pick with some cash or something like that. So,
all right. Okay. Anything else you want to talk about draft wise? Cause we've murdered the draft discussion despite the fact we have almost like what? Yeah. Give me your percentage chance. The Pelicans pick anyone other than the 56th pick in the draft.
10%.
Okay. That's exactly what I would have said. So we talked a whole lot about a draft that we're probably just going to be able to sit there and watch and cry about.
I know. I'm just hoping for other Western Conference teams not to get better. That is what Thursday night has become for me.
Maybe we'll get lucky and, you know, the Minnesota Timberwolves will take Okafor, and then the Lakers will take Kristaps Porzingis, who'll be terrible, and then like the 76ers get somebody else, like Russell.
Could hope for it, yeah. I think, I mean, we could also see a trade up and right. I mean, the Ashik trade came out of nowhere right before the draft, so that could happen. But yeah, next Sunday I'm sure we'll be on the podcast talking about something that'll be more, you know, up our alley and with many more possibilities that, you know, Dell is going to do something in free agency. So that's coming up, which is, I mean, I think it's awesome that the finals just ended and now we're already at draft and free agency. Yep.
Although, you know, as soon as free agency, after like a week or two into it, then everything gets really slow. So we'll probably have less podcasts after that point, but you're right. Next week we will be having our free agency podcast and, I'm sure we'll all have little dreams of what we could possibly pull in, and we'll have a whole lot clearer picture on you know, what kind of space we have and if anybody's moving because of the draft. So if you got anything else, Michael, or are we done here?
That is it.
All right. Thanks for listening to In the Know, and we'll be back in a week.